Wait, no.
Are we ready
Chris
to go,
Rocco?
Griggs?
Yeah, well, I thought we were missing some people, but
I think
I guess
we got
we're starting.
Everybody. This is
I
Tickle
guess
Hoops
the
HD.
train has left the station.
Good evening, everybody, or good morning, depending on what you watch this. Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is the Hoops HD report, recording live on tape delay here, a little after 9 p.m. on January 17th, Monday evening. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Unfortunately, the other people that are missing could not make it this evening, but we do have the puppet David Griggs to one side of me.
Yes, we do.
Down below, we've got John Tytel and David Dorman. And on the other side of me up here, coming to you live on blurry 1985 Betamax, is Mr. John Stalica back.
Yeah, Stalica. We're literally taping over 1985 Loyola Chicago as we speak right now during their Sweet 16 run.
Jeez. but first of all, Stalica, welcome back. You've been with us for a little while here, and coming out of COVID protocols, we know. So wish you the best of health as you get healthier and everything. But let's get right to it. We've got a lot to get to this evening, a lot of games to go over, and I figured we'd start things off today. It's something we haven't done in a little while. One of our old favorites here. It's time for a little blind resume.
Oh, a blind, yes.
So what I'm going to do is go ahead and pull up the screen share here in half a second if I can get the stuff set correctly. I think I did. We're doing a little blind resume today. My question is, which resume is better, the one on the left or the one on the right? And I know with a little bit of looking, it's probably pretty easy to figure out at least one of these two. But Dorman, let me start with you. Which resume, just as a blind resume, do you like better, left or right? Or even?
I'm going with the team on the right. A couple
really?
More tier two wins. I know the tier one wins, they're down, they lose 2-1, but yeah, it seems to me they've won more middle tier games than the team on the left.
I'm afraid of where you're going with this. The team on the left looks obvious. The two high profile road wins, no real, yeah.
Well, I'm one bad loss there on the left, but on the left, how about those two tier 1A road wins, Griggs? I mean, you love tier A1 road wins.
Oh, yes, I love tier 1A road wins.
Do you like
yes.
the team on the left better?
I'm afraid where you're going with this. I'm afraid that this has something to do with the bracket I posted today.
Well, it has a little bit, but not as badly
yes,
as you
I
think
like
it
the
is.
Team on the left. When seeing it blindly, yes. I don't know who played who or what, but yes.
Tytel, are you with him on the team on the left? I think you've probably already figured that team out, have you not?
A little Pac-12 pride with two big road wins last week. But I also love the strength of schedule on the left compared to the strength of schedule on the right.
And where I was going with this actually was a team on the left, I think it's pretty much a dead giveaway for anyone that follows closely, is the Oregon Ducks with a huge week this week, winning games at UCLA and at USC. Team on the right, I went with the Oklahoma Sooners, just because it's a team that I think everybody's just kind of been assuming is that right there with the NCAA tournament, and I'm just not certain that I see anything that's in the top half of the bracket at the moment, as the Sooners have been, you know, have lost two in a row and don't have much more than a home win over Iowa State that's really good on this profile. But Stalica, what are your thoughts here? Is on both these teams as we see who they are?
Well, you go to Oklahoma, they have a decent win against Iowa State, but they still have that iffy loss against Butler, and given how the Bulldogs have looked of late, I'm still wondering just how the Bulldogs were able to have everything fall in place for them on that one night.
Yeah, and I think, Tytel, one of the places I wanted to go with this was that Oklahoma team who's been solidly in the field for since probably the beginning of the season for most people. Oregon wasn't even on anybody's radar until Dana Altman decided to do what Dana Altman does every year, which is have his team wake up in the middle of January and become a great team. So what about the Ducks?
I was certainly ready to throw in the towel. It's one thing to lose to Houston and Baylor, obviously, but ASU and Stanford, even though they were one possession games, almost inexcusable. Since then, they've won 6-7, only an 8-point loss to Baylor, which is obviously very respectable. Amazing road trip to LA last week, the 3-point overtime win at the Bruins, 10-point win at USC, career wins 700 and 701 for Coach Altman. Bunch of winnable games ahead, but they finished February 3 straight, my Wildcats, and then the rematch with the Bruins and the Trojans. Terrible free throw shooting, under 65%. So hopefully they can figure that out. Otherwise, they're going to keep losing close games. Guard Will Richardson has been great during their 5-game winning streak, 20 points a game, 3 assists a game, 15 of 27 from behind the arc. I have them as one of the very last teams in the field.
And the other game against Arizona, are they trying to reschedule that? Wasn't that one of the canceled games? I'm sure
they're trying to, but the clock is ticking. We're like 9 weeks from Selection Sunday, 8 weeks from Selection Sunday.
But that was the canceled game. If I'm correct.
I think so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Big Jed, comment on them also?
Well, yeah. It's just they just look like night and day. This team was ranked really high to start the season, and rightfully so. They were really talented. They had a ton of potential, but they didn't live up to it. And it wasn't just that they lost; they lost huge. BYU just blew them out of the building. St. Mary's probably a tournament team, but like certainly not a protected seed, top 10-ish team like we thought Oregon was. But for the last week or two, they've just finally started to look like the team that we thought that they would be. And when you look at what's ahead of them, Wazoo, Washington, Oregon State, Colorado, they might win their next seven heading into Arizona, which is rescheduled.
and that's the amazing week. And I guess, Dorman, though, as we turn to the rest of the Pac-12, the other big thing of note was USC had three games over the course of the past week, but lost two out of three. And maybe we've been overrating USC just because they had that undefeated that they had before this week.
I agree with you, Chad. It was totally due to not losing a game where all the computer and the metrics loved them. So I agree with you, Chad. SC was more of a paper darling or a team without much going on, but they had the San Diego State win, which you can see there. Oregon, on the other side, as we just talked about, it's incredible how teams this year can move up or down the bracket so quickly. Last week, I thought it was Miami flew up the bracket. This week, Oregon was on the borderline, and now they're flying up. So it doesn't take much, but a great weekend in L.A. For the Ducks, and they certainly deserve consideration.
Well, winning at UCLA and USC is more than a little.
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, I guess one of my points of this is I don't know how big that Oregon at USC win may be at the end of the day. The win at UCLA, I think, will be fantastic all season. The win at USC may prove to be not as great of a win as we think it is this week as we go through the next couple of weeks.
I assume I would be stunned if USC didn't make the tournament this year. So I still think it'll stand up. It won't be a road win versus a protected seed, so to say. But I believe it'll be a road win against a tournament team.
It might be a road win against a 10 seed, though, as opposed to Stalika, I got the upcoming schedule here for this week in the Pac-12. None of these top teams look like they're going to be facing off against each other. So we're looking more at, like, everybody just needs to hold serve this week. Am I correct?
Well, we're looking at holding serve, but there's also a good chance that USC may end up with a four-game losing streak because they got to go to Colorado and Utah. Again, not easy,
it's not.
You're going to have to win games that are going to be really difficult at this point.
Yeah. I agree with Stalika back in 1986 there. I mean, that's a tough road stint for a team that hasn't looked that good. They've looked very 10 seedish.
He should have been calling them the Pac-10, though, if he's broadcasting from 1986. Right, yeah. Or was it the Pac-8 back then? I think it was Pac-10 by that point. let's jump over to the SEC, though. And thanks to one AP voter who decided that Auburn was the ninth best team in the nation, despite having probably the best profile in the nation right now, Auburn is the number two team in the nation in both polls and not number one in the AP poll this week. But let's start, though, maybe with this Auburn team. And Dorman, they go last Tuesday, they go to Alabama, they win, they go to Ole Miss, and they win. Wow, is this team playing good, in my opinion.
Great. You threw me to Auburn last week, and I said I thought they were title contenders. The last week only made it more obvious to me. This team is really good. They're real athletic. I love the name is throwing me off, the freshman point guard, Williams, I believe. Is just playing out of this world. He's got some athletes and some front court guys that just jump out of the gym. They get up and down the court. And once you pass half court, they are all over you defensively. Auburn is every bit the part of a one seed today.
A couple other teams I want to discuss at this conference. And Stalika, let me ask you about the Florida Gators, because I'm not going to ask Griggs about them because he thinks that they're like a three seed right now.
Not a three.
They did pick up a huge win this week at South Carolina, but is this a tournament team even in your opinion?
Well, they might be a three seed in the NIT, given the way things have been going for the past month right here. It does seem like ages ago when they beat the Buckeyes down in, I think it was Fort Myers or one of those early season tournaments. But even a home win against Florida State hasn't had as much weight as it normally would.
Yeah, the Florida State win. I mean, Florida State did pick up a big win this week. We'll get to the ACC in a few minutes. But you got to, Griggs, you got to overcome that Texas Southern and Maryland losses. And you can't do that with only beating Ohio State. And I think you're dead wrong having them as a 9 seed in your bracket this morning.
Well, I thought, like, the road win at South Carolina was at least something. They didn't have one before. They kind of had one now. And one's infinitely more than zero. I don't think that there is much there. I'll be kind of honest. There wasn't much on the 10 and 11 line that I really liked either.
Well, you can read our comments about that. Florida, an interesting trip. Tytel, they're going to be hosting Mississippi State later this week. Mississippi State, a team that's kind of, you know, getting at least a little bit of look at this point with what they did against Alabama.
When you're beating Alabama at home by 2 points and you've won 6 of 7 with only a loss against Mississippi, yeah, I have you in the field. Brutal schedule. You mentioned at Florida, they also have Kentucky and Texas Tech and a home game with their in-state rival to finish the month. But they've been doing it with junior point guard Iverson Molinar, a.k.a. the Panamanian sensation. He's been, frankly, sensational in his past 7 games. 20 points a game, 4 assists a game, 38 of 45 from the line. I have him as a 10 seed.
And do you have them ranked higher than Florida?
Not if Florida's a 3 seed. No, I don't.
Okay. Mississippi State has no road win. Like, to me, that's just a disqualifier at this point.
They do have a neutral court win over Richmond. They've got the test, though.
Richmond, yes.
Okay. But look at the fact that 4 out of their next 6 actually go for a little bit. 6 out of their next 9 are on the road. So we've got
to win. Yeah, and they need to win a few of those. Yeah. If they lose all 6 of those.
Well, I don't think anybody's going to argue if they lose all 6 of those that they belong in the field. Yeah. I guess we should also mention quickly what Kentucky did to Tennessee on Saturday. Because, yes, it was a home win, but when you thrash a very good Tennessee team by about 350 points, Dorman, let me ask you, Kentucky, that caught my attention.
It caught my attention, too. I turned on the game about 5 minutes late. It never got close. They absolutely boat raced them. Kentucky seems to be picking up Coach Cal's wishes and formulas, and they're really playing good basketball, sharing the ball, playing tough defense. Kentucky usually gets this. Calipari gets young kids usually, not necessarily the case this year, but turns them in to better players come February and March. Seems to be the case this year. Kentucky's moving up my bracket quickly.
Yeah, they do have a true road win, Griggs, as well. Being at Vanderbilt, but it's a true road win. It's not the Vanderbilt team this year, quite honestly.
It really isn't, and they really are kind of looking the part. Their resume needs to get better, but if they play like they had, like they've been playing, it will. A&M, probably not. Auburn is probably way over their heads, but A&M probably isn't, especially if they play the way they did against Tennessee. You know, the two big games, their two biggest wins – were their two biggest games of the year, and it kind of makes you wonder what the hell happened in the game against Notre Dame. But when you look at their losses, minus the one at Notre Dame, they played Duke kind of tough. They were right in there at LSU. It's very hard to win at LSU. Other than Auburn, they probably don't have a harder road game than that for the rest of the year. So I think that part of it was they hadn't hit their stride yet. Another part of it was that maybe their schedule was a little bit front-loaded. I'm with Dorman, though. Their profile will catch up with how good they actually are if they keep playing like that.
Distinguished coaching career, Rick Barnes, that extends from George Mason, Providence, Clemson, and Texas. Yeah. His teams have ever given up 100.
It was the first time Rick Barnes' team had ever given up triple figures in a game.
Really?
Ever.
Wow.
So congrats to Kentucky. I guess I want to throw one other team up real quickly. That's Arkansas. I pulled up on the right there. Huge, huge win at LSU this week. Yeah. For an Arkansas team that go up to a great start. We call them a fraud. They look like they were a fraud when they started losing to Hofstra and Vanderbilt, but right back on the radar with this LSU win. Tytel, are you looking at Arkansas at this point?
Yeah, you couldn't have put it better. It's like they're a fraudulent fraud because of all they're going back and forth. But you can't hide the 2 tier 3 losses. I understand, like, they're not terrible, but they're not great. And God forbid, they better not lose to South Carolina coming up.
Well, sure you can. Chad, can you scroll up some?
Scroll up.
Yeah, scroll up. So the tier three losses aren't on the screen.
I was trying to figure out where you're going with that. Well, actually, you can't scroll up any higher at the top of the sheet.
Correct. Tytel is correct. You can't hide the loss.
There's the upcoming schedule. As far as we know, most of these games, luckily, we've reached a point where a lot of these games look like they're going to be on now as opposed to off. A few other games of note, though. Big one Saturday, Kentucky at Auburn. We've also got LSU at Alabama, LSU at Tennessee. So huge week we got you for this LSU team coming up.
What I'd like to highlight, Chad, and all kidding aside, I think this Kentucky A&M game is really important for both teams. Kentucky needs some road wins. A&M needs some wins of any kind that fall under the quality of notable. They're 14-2. That's certainly a bloated record, but it's not bloated on a whole lot of protein. So that is a big game that I think, I don't want to call it a sense of urgency. I think that's overstating it, but there's definitely something at stake for both those teams.
Let's keep things rolling though and jump over to the Big 12. We want to talk about conferences that are just absolutely amazing here. If Oklahoma State was eligible, I think that the arguments that you could be looking at all 10 teams for tournament bids here in the middle of January. Even with Oklahoma State off, you look at Kansas State, Dorman, they go and they beat this red-hot Texas Tech team who beats Kansas, beats Baylor, and then loses a home game and loses a road game at K-State. I can't figure this out really, but is this what we just can get from the Big 12 all season?
I think there's so many good games, so many tough games that, yeah, this might just keep happening because Texas Tech, like you said, was coming off the best week of the year for any team going with Baylor and Texas. And then all of a sudden, it's just crazy. The Big 12 is so tough. All these road trips are going to be really, really big because every one of them counts. Every one of them is going to go on the resume and the committee is going to see it. And Kansas State did their part in the non-conference. So all these teams are going to have a really, really crazy year in the Big 12.
And the other team that suffers the loss here at Salika, Baylor, loses a second game in a row, this time again at home, now to Oklahoma State. So there's the other team on the bottom of the conference standings winning a huge game.
A game where I can't recall Baylor ever getting a lead against Oklahoma State, even though the Bears were able to knock it down to a point in the final minute. But they would commit a couple unforced turnovers in the final minutes. And I guess it was pretty indicative of how that day had gone, where nothing seemed to go right for the Bears when they needed it.
A lot of things did go right for Oklahoma State. I want to say that they led by close to 20 at certain points in that game. Baylor had to fight back from being way behind just to have a chance to win it at the end. And I hate the term good loss, and I hate whenever a coach says, well, we needed to lose a game. Having said that, where does Baylor go from here? Were they kind of sleepwalking, and does this get them refocused, or are they just not as good as we thought they were? I don't think that's it, because holy crap, look at their resume.
Look at these upcoming schedules when we look at these Big 12 teams. K-State's ranked 75 in the net. Everybody else in this conference is pretty much top 50 or very close to the top 50. There is not a single game off the rest of the season for any of these Big 12 teams. Tytel, TCU, another team this week, beats Oklahoma. Now they're just outside the top 50 in the net as well.
1-point overtime win against the Sooners last Saturday. You mentioned that the rest of the schedule is top 75 teams, including a trip to Oklahoma State on Wednesday. They're outside the top 250 from both one-point land and three-point land. Luckily, they're winning games with defense. Coach Jamie Dixon made a nice move last month. He inserted former McDonald's All-American and USC transfer Chuck O'Bannon Jr. into the starting lineup. It's working out very well. He made the game-winning three in overtime to beat the Sooners. Past five games, he's averaging 12 points a game. Still needs to work on his free throw shooting, only 61% this year. Today, outside the bubble. If they win at Iowa State on Saturday, I think I'm going to have to include them in my next bracket.
I'll tell you something. You look at this conference, and Griggs, I almost look at this conference, I say, well, these teams are just going to keep cannibalizing themselves all season. Will 10-8 win in conference, win this conference, the conference regular season title? That might be how much this conference beats each other up.
Yeah, I mean, you get the sense that like every night you're playing a team that's not just in the tournament, but in the top half of the bracket. I mean, you're not, but you're certainly going to be battle tested if you make it all the way to March. I don't know, and enjoy it while it lasts. I don't want to harp on this, but it's the last time we're going to get to see this conference in this format. When does that take place? When
it could be 2 more years technically, where there's still a chance it could move up into next year, though.
But
here's the upcoming schedule, and I'll tell you which game you got to circle. Every single game on this list here. There is not an easy game here. You look at Kansas, who had one of the better weeks this week. They've got to go two road trips, including a trip to K-State. They're in-state rivals there. I don't know. Baylor's got 2 more road games at West Virginia, at Oklahoma. There's not a game on this list here that I'm not going to be circling and say, I want to watch this game.
Right. Baylor-West Virginia.
I don't want to watch this game. Yeah.
West Virginia in a bit of a feud with their fans, some of the players and coaches. So what's the – it might be a hostile environment against West Virginia in their own building tomorrow.
Yeah. Look at West Virginia. You've just got a home game as a Baylor to Church of Texas Tech this week. I mean, it's a normal week in this conference. I guess we got to keep moving on here. And
it really is hard to win at West Virginia these days.
Let's jump over to the Big Ten. And Tytel, I know you've got some big thoughts about Illinois' win at Nebraska today, correct? or I'm sorry, that was Indiana that won Nebraska. Illinois won Nebraska last week.
Yes.
I know you want to talk about Illinois.
They had won 11 of 12, painful double overtime home loss to Purdue earlier today. Ivey made one more free throw than the entire Illini team, 13-12. They get to rebound on Friday heading to Maryland, and then a huge game on January 25th when they host the Spartans. On offense, they're getting it done behind the arc, 38%, top 20 in the nation. Defense, they're getting it done in the paint, 42% from two-point range allowed, number 8 in the nation. And the good news, after the horrible loss, painful loss, point guard Andre Curbelo, he had missed 11 games since a concussion in November. Last week, Coach Underwood said that he had a, quote, minor setback, so I wasn't sure if he was even coming back this month. Came back on the court today, 20 points in 26 minutes. Good news. I have him as a 4 seed right now, even after the loss to Purdue.
I'll tell you, my problem with Illinois is I think on the court they look like a top 4 seed. Yeah. My problem with them is when I look at their profile, nice win at Iowa, not a great win because I think Iowa's profile is a little suspect. And then I get down to a couple wins over probably bad side of the bubble teams, and then a bunch of wins over garbage. I guess, you know, there's nothing really bad here since other than the Cincinnati game, which I think was a fluke. But I think I want to see one or two more really big wins to on this profile, which they'll definitely have the chances to get.
Yeah, and that's really fair. And I think that they're a team that if they play like they're as good as they're – like if they play like they're capable, they'll get the chances with what's remaining of their schedule. I can't seem to talk right now. Let's go to somebody else.
I'll go to Stalika. Stalika, how about the team that beat Illinois today, Purdue? Is this the best team in the Big Ten, even though they do have two conference cut losses?
Well, even the two losses are going to seem to be a little bit flukish right here. The one against Rutgers, notwithstanding, given that was Purdue's first ever as a number one team, but this is one where the Boilers could easily have folded, but getting Coburn to foul out during the overtime definitely helped the Boilers' cause right here. And that'll be a nice statement win right there to offset the Wisconsin loss at home for sure.
Yeah, and Dorman, it's Wisconsin who I personally think is the best team in this conference, although everyone's yelling about Purdue now that they won today.
I've been high on Purdue. I've been high on Purdue more than most of us in Hoops HD. I think they're really good. I know they slipped up at home against Wisconsin, but like you just said, Wisconsin might be one of the top 5 or 6 teams in the country, and they lost in the rack. I don't see in the wins they put together out of conference, Villanova, North Carolina, Florida State, NC State, the list goes on and on. I'm really high on Purdue. And I'm going to say the same thing about Wisconsin. Wisconsin just keeps winning. The Providence loss, I'm surprised it's even a tier two, but I don't think they were healthy that day. I believe Davis was out, so I think they're going to get good credit for that one. Wisconsin and the Big Ten, Purdue, Illinois, as tough as any conference at the top.
Yeah, that those two teams, and maybe not only those two teams, Griggs, we also have Michigan State, Ohio State up there.
I like Michigan State too. Ohio State, I like, but I don't like them as Elite Eight Final Four contenders the way I do Michigan State and Whiskey.
Okay, I'll put those two profiles
I'm not as big on Purdue. I just don't think that by the time we're done, I think that they're going to be behind those. I think it's going to go Wisconsin, Michigan State, and then Purdue.
Okay. Michigan State, though, with that home loss to Northwestern on Saturday.
Yes.
Just part of this craziness we saw on Saturday, quite honestly.
Saturday was college basketball's drunkest day in a very long time. You had that. You had LSU losing at home to Arkansas. You had Baylor losing at home to Oklahoma State. So much happened that I can't even remember. Like, crazy things that would normally be our top talking points just kind of faded into the background because that's how nutso it was.
What is it about Northwestern suddenly being a thorn Michigan State side? That's, I think, the third year in a row the Wildcats have knocked off Sparty, and I thought they were done with them after getting the win in Chicago a couple weeks ago.
Tytel, let me ask you real quickly here. Michigan State, is there any cause for concern if they barely beat Minnesota and then lose this game to Northwestern, both games being at home this week, or is it just kind of a fluke and we expect them maybe to bounce back and win at Wisconsin and win at Illinois this week?
A tall task, Chad. I would not.
Or at least one of the two.
I would not sweat a 2-point loss, even at home, even to a Northwestern team that might not make the tournament. But even if they lose at Wisconsin and Illinois, like, they better beat their in-state rival on January 29th.
Yeah, we don't even talk about Michigan on the show anymore. That's how bad things have gone for the Wolverines these days. Yeah. But real quick, here's the upcoming schedule. We mentioned a few of these games, but I've got to give a shout out to Ohio State, who had a spot open up on their schedule, and they went out and very, very bravely scheduled the worst team in Division I in IUPUI. So congrats to Ohio State for that big game coming up tomorrow night.
Well, you chastised them, Chad. They wanted to play a team that was going to be on the board in IUPUI might via the Centenario.
Ohio State was trying to schedule two games at once right here. So maybe that's what was going through their minds.
they figured it counts as an Indiana win and a Purdue win, right?
Yeah.
What else we got to get to here? How about the Big East Conference? As the conference standings load here, they do not seem to be loading. Dorman, what about the Big East Conference? We're definitely having big technical difficulties here. It says Big East.
It says Big East, but there's only the Big East.
There it is.
Yeah.
There we go. And maybe we start with Villanova, who had a huge lead at Xavier, almost blew the game, but did hold on to win, and then did unholy things to Butler over the weekend.
Absolutely. Boat race, Butler. Villanova seems to be finding their stride. I love what they did in the non-conference. I know they lost some, but big deal. It's not going to hurt you. It only makes your team better. So then they come into the conference and they're playing really good ball. They're finding their stride. Coach Jay Wright, I think, has the team on the right page here. And going forward, I look like Villanova is the team to beat in the Big East.
Right. And Stalika, on the right here, I'm going to pull up a team that had a very stunning loss this week in Seton Hall as they go to DePaul and lose by 4 points.
Well, they had a stunning loss, but they also came pretty close to a stunning win at DePaul because the Blue Demons had an 11-point lead in the final 50 seconds and came this close to blowing the whole thing wide open. But fortunately, the Blue Demons were able to hit their free throws, and Seton Hall now in a little bit of a tailspin themselves because it wasn't just DePaul they lost. It was also a Marquette team that's rapidly improving.
And Marquette on its way up. A team that's neither going up nor down, Tytel, is Providence. They haven't played in a week due to a COVID shutdown, but I know you had a few thoughts on the Friars.
So hard to know exactly what we got here with a team that hasn't played since January 8th. They're scheduled to get back on the court Thursday when they host Georgetown. They better win some games now because the final five they have, Xavier, Creighton, and a pair against Villanova, four of those five. Indiana transfer Al Durham. In mid-December, he had three straight games where he only scored in single digits, and he was 0 of 8 from three-point range. Changed his whole game around in the last four games. He's focused on getting the free throw line, and it works. 15 points a game, 27 of 31 at the line. And if you have to have a scheduled pause, then now is a good time because starting point guard AJ Reeves missed the past two games with a finger injury. However, I read one report today that said he's going to miss, quote, significant time. So that could be a big blow. Oof. But as of today, I have him as a sixth seed.
Yeah, I like this Providence team. Griggs, I know the team you like, and I'm with you there. Four wins in a row for Marquette there on the right.
Yeah, I know that, like, we kind of hammered them a little bit, or, well, you did, I didn't, for what they did out of conference or didn't do. But, like, when you look at this resume, other than the St. Bonaventure loss, which in and of itself is not horrible, you know, there's nothing there that would fall under the category of damaging or setback or bad loss. And you start to look at them, they've got the win against Illinois. They have the neutral floor win against West Virginia, and they're starting to string together wins. They win the next one's a very, very, very tall order, though.
Yeah, they are going to Villanova. They're going to Villanova coming up here. I think it's coming up Wednesday night. Huge game to circle, but there's a lot of huge games to circle, including that Providence Seton Hall game. I believe that one is off on Tuesday night.
Is it? Okay.
Am I correct, Tytel?
That sounds right.
Yeah, I believe Providence is not supposed to be back in the court till for a few days, until Thursday.
Go back to Marquette for a moment, please, because their next five games are probably going to be make or break for the Golden Eagles right here. They got two against Nova, and then, yes, the home game against Xavier, not going to be easy. And then they have the road swing at Seton Hall at Providence. They haven't won on the road yet in conference play outside of Georgetown, but if they can snatch either Hall or Providence, that would go a long way towards possibly the Golden Eagles wearing white or whatever their home color will be.
Yeah. Light yellow.
Since we have Stalika here, what do you think of your team, Stalika, Xavier?
Well, I think it's a good thing they finally got the two Villanova games out of the way, because they can finally – it took them about a half to get rid of the hangover against Creighton, but fortunately, because Creighton was giving out turnovers like a secret Santa on Saturday, I think they had like 23 or 24 turnovers. You cannot do that on the road against – the Musketeers, however down they might be mentally.
Yeah.
Xavier with a real interesting pair of road games at DePaul, at Marquette this week. At DePaul, just because of what DePaul did to Seton Hall, at Marquette, huge game this weekend.
Yeah, Xavier outstanding at home, not quite as good on the road. And I realize you can say that for about 330 of the 358 teams. But I kind of think this game against DePaul is one where they need to get it done because it's low-hanging fruit.
Well, Griggs, we've already moved on to the ACC. So
okay, and now we're into the ACC, where the Miami Hurricanes are in first place.
The Miami Hurricanes are in first place, half a game up on Duke and having the tiebreaker technically as well. But, yeah. Tytel, let me start with you, because I think you had a chance to see Notre Dame with a non-conference game today. You were there, correct?
Almost saw a non-conference loss. They hung on to beat Howard by a couple points earlier today at the MLK Junior Classic. I'll be posting a photo essay about it tomorrow if all goes well. They head to Louisville next Saturday to get back on track in conference play. They had won six in a row before a six-point loss at VaTech last Saturday, but their win over Kentucky last month is obviously looking better every single day. Coach Mike Bray is only using a seven-man rotation, so I'm a little worried they're all going to run out of gas sometime soon. But freshman Blake Wesley's looked great over his past five games, including today, 18 points a game, two steals a game. But for God's sake, please tell him to stop shooting threes. 9 of 34 in his past five. Today, outside the bubble. But in this weakest of weak conferences, I think they could win 20 games overall, which is amazing.
But 20 games, they may win 20 games in the ACC and not make the NCAA tournament, which might be more amazing. I don't know that 20 game winner in the ACC regular season has ever missed the tournament before, but
I think we're going to see multiple teams do that this year. This is just not a strong league.
Dorman, there is one team that's pretty strong in this conference. That's the Duke Blue Devils up there on the left with the Gonzaga and the Kentucky wins, non-conference and only the two losses. Picked up another win on the road this week at Wake.
Yep, they did. They got out to a big lead against Wake and held on. They looked every bit the part of the top team in this conference. They're starting to play better. I actually thought they looked actually better when Coach K sat out and John Shire had them playing better offensively, actually, sharing the ball a little better. But I'm with the rest of the guys. This conference is down. This conference is weak. You look at Duke and their schedule coming up. I really don't see any of these games till we get to maybe the North Carolina road game, where they really should slip up. It's Florida State, Syracuse, Clemson, Louisville. Nothing impresses me from the ACC this year.
I'll tell you who doesn't impress me is the team Chad just pulled up.
8 miles apart, never made the NCAA tournament. Griggs, I would have had them barely in the field. I cannot argue with you leaving this team off of your bracket today.
No. But go ahead. They haven't done anything. There's nothing there. Have they even beaten an NIT team? Well, yeah, Virginia probably is. I'm not even sure Michigan is. Furman probably is. Okay, they've beaten a couple of NIT teams at home. That's all they've done.
UNC Asheville may be the best team in the Big South. They beat them.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think that, like, this team has so much ground to cover. The teams that I do like, I like Miami, and Florida State is starting to string together wins. I still think they have a lot of work to do, but at least they've started doing it.
Well, let me ask Sleek about that. The Florida State, who had been going downwards, picked up the win over Miami this past week. Does that change the complexion of one or both of these profiles at all for you?
Well, it probably keeps Florida State from having a disastrous loss at this point. I mean, losing to Syracuse, that's not recommended at all this year. Getting the home win against Miami, well, maybe a fringe tournament team the way things are going, but had they lost to Louisville, that would have been disaster this year, given the shipwreck the Cardinals have become.
And how about how big this game, though, is coming up this week when Florida State's going to be hosting Duke?
That's real big.
That's one of the key games, maybe on the conference schedule here. If Florida State could pick up this win, it rights a lot of wrongs, even though it is a home win. Also, North Carolina at Miami this week. So there are a few games worth scheduling. Florida State, Miami, round two coming up on Saturday. Syracuse at Duke. But why don't we...
Now, on a side note, I would like to congratulate Boston College from coming from 20-plus points down on the road against Clemson. Congratulations, you're 7-8, but...
And you know what that means for both teams?
Malika handing out the high praise today.
Let's talk. You know what? We're this far into this podcast. We have not even discussed the number one team in the nation.
Yes.
Dorman. The Gonzaga Bulldogs very narrowly became number one team in the AP poll. They actually ran away with number one in the coaches poll today. But are the Zags really the number one team in the nation?
If I were given a vote, I would have had Auburn ahead of Gonzaga, but I would have had Gonzaga right there at two. The way they are playing offense and the efficiency they are playing offense, I know they give up some points, but this is going to be a Zags team that is tough to beat in March because of the way they're scoring the ball. And they're getting good looks down low in the paint and dunks, or they're having wide open threes. And this Gonzaga team is talented enough to hit open shots. And if they're not, they're smart enough to go down low. And they got everything. And they're clicking. And I think Mark Few's bunch will be a tough out in March.
Yeah, what they did to BYU, incredibly impressive. Cool. Then they dropped 115 points on the road at a Santa Clara team that was respectable, not NCAA tournament good, but a respectable Santa Clara team. They just made mincemeat out of them. Griggs, BYU off of that loss though goes to San Francisco in a very intriguing game and came back late to win that one.
Yeah, they came from behind against a good team on the road and won. I like this Cougar team as a solid tournament team. I mean, I don't like them as a protected seed or anything like that. I think San Francisco is also a tournament team. So beating a tournament team on the road, I'm never going to boo that. That was incredible. Real good win. And one they kind of needed, I think.
Of note here, St. Mary's also picked up a road win this week. But Tytel, I think you want to go a little bit off of the radar here in the West Coast Conference and talk about another team, correct?
Yeah, we don't talk about the Toreros too much. But Coach Sam Scull, he only won 3 games last year. He started 7-7 this year. He's won 3 in a row. So let's give him a little shout out at 10-7. They're not living by the three. They only make 32% of them. The good news is they're not dying by it either, because they only allow 29% to their opponents. Senior power forward Marcellus Arlington, he transferred in from St. John's. dominant inside the paint during the three-game winning streak, 16 points, 10 boards a game, averaging a double-double. He's also a solid 36% three-point shooter this year. Somehow, his past four games, he's only made two threes out of 15 attempts. I have them as like a 22 seed at the moment, but that being said, BYU still better not overlook him on Thursday.
BYU better not overlook him on Thursday. I also highlighted a game there on purpose, San Francisco Portland. That game is actually off. They've rescheduled in order to get the game in. It's going to be San Francisco Gonzaga on Thursday. So huge game coming up Thursday. Not even showing up on your screens here, but due to a rearranging of schedules, probably the game, one of the best games of the season you're going to want to circle here coming up between the Zags and the Dons.
Yeah, real quick, if I can, Chad, I'd like to congratulate LMU for picking up their first conference win, evening out their 7-7 record. I am awarding them the John Stalica Award of Excellence for the West Coast Conferences.
I'm not sure what that means, but
I don't know. If he's going to award Boston College, then I'm going to award
Stalica. How about the American Athletic Conference here, where your beloved Cincinnati team, being a Xavier guy, but Cincinnati actually picked up a pair of wins over East Carolina and at Wichita State this week. Are they suddenly on your radar at all?
Well, I mean, if we're talking about NIT, sure, Cincinnati would be on the radar. They do seem to have a Wichita State's number.
They do have the win over Illinois by 20 points earlier this season, though.
Right, but there's still not been much consistency for the Bearcats this year. I mean, they're probably going to try to get their game at Houston rescheduled. They had the missed opportunity at Memphis, which at this point may be one of the reasons why they're not going to be on the right side of the cut line right now.
Yeah, and Dorman, I got to tell you, Memphis, just when you start thinking that things are looking good there, they do what they did this week, losing at UCF and at East Carolina.
They are killing themselves because, just like you said, they get a big game and they actually look good and they pull it out and then they go on the road to Central Florida and look terrible. I got this team off my board this week. They got a lot of work to do in a conference where there's not a lot of helping spots, so not a lot of wins to be had. They get Houston twice. They better win at least once if they want to be in consideration and stop losing to these teams they're better than.
I think I might have had my biggest COVID setback over the weekend when I was watching Central Florida lose at South Florida. God, that was ugly.
Yeah, Central Florida, a team that we put right on the borderline when we did our bracket run down Thursday, they lose a South Florida game. SMU, Tytel, after the loss at Cincinnati a couple weeks ago, has bounced back with a couple games that wins in a row.
So let me start out. When your best win is at Tulane by single digits, like, I understand that you're not in the field. But they have won 10 of 11, and they're 13-4, and they're heading to Memphis Thursday, which gives me a chance to publicly apologize to all the Memphis haters on this podcast. I was wrong. Mea culpa. They're top 30 in the nation from behind the arc, almost 38% a game. Senior point guard Kendrick Davis, he's been great all year. Past six games, he even took it up a notch. 23 points, four assists a game, 33 of 35 from the line. Biggest concern, ironically, is their size. Each of their top six scorers, 6'5 or shorter. So I don't know how they're going to do against somebody with a big man inside. Outside the bubble today, they have five winnable games ahead before they host Houston on an injured Houston team on February 9th.
Yeah, injured Houston team, but Griggs, Houston just keeps winning no matter who they've got on the court. And I don't know that they have a tough game, maybe until that SMU or the Cincinnati game before it.
Right. I don't want to say that like they're just as good now as they would have been had they been at full strength, but I will say that they're that on winning. And do you even continue to knock that for them? Do you continue to knock them for that anymore? Because they just keep winning.
Right. And if you're missing players, but you keep winning without them, that tells me you didn't really need, maybe you didn't need those players to be a great team, which is amazing because they lost two of their best players, but upcoming schedule, the games of note coming up this week. I don't even know what you want to do. UCF at East Carolina, SMU, Memphis, that Tytel, I don't know. Just, maybe we just jump over. Let's jump over to the Atlantic 10.
I'll take Tulane in Central Florida. See if the overachieving Fighting Ron Hunters continue their run.
Is that for the John Titel Award of Excellence? Yeah, sorry, John Sleek Award of Excellence.
Yeah. Yeah.
But over here in the A-10, Dorman, Davidson picks up a couple more wins, including a nice road win at Richmond on Friday night.
Yeah, that was a tough game. I thought they might struggle there and find a way to lose, but they don't. Davidson looks very good. But I will say one thing. Don't count out the Bonnies just yet. The Bonnies, to me, still have life, still have a big chance to make this tournament. They need to put some wins together. I know you're about to pull them up. But Davidson is out. I can't believe how good Davidson is playing. I really didn't see this coming from them. I thought they would struggle a few times. They do have the loss to San Francisco, but that's nothing bad there. Besides that, a New Mexico State loss, that there's nothing wrong about that. They have in VCU at Fordham, as crazy as it sounds, in Fordham these days might be a little tricky, and then VCU again. If they can, you know, Davidson has a very good opportunity here, stay perfect in the A-10.
Maybe stay perfect until a huge battle February 1st at the Bonnies.
Exactly.
Titel, how about the Bonnies, a team that we kind of forgot about when they went on pause, but and I know their net's only 92, but I look at the profile. I think I see better than 92 when you look into this profile, do we not?
Yeah, I mean, both of you kind of stole my thunder, so I'll just give you the highlights.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, they're the team worth talking about, so I like that. They should not overlook the game at Dayton on Tuesday, but then three winnable games before the possible A-10 matchup of the year, as Chad said, on February 1st when Davidson comes to town. All three of their losses have been by double digits, which is a little concerning. Good news, when they keep it close, they win because they're shooting 78% from the line, top 25 in the nation. And they finally got senior point guard Kyle Lofton back last month. He missed three games with a left ankle injury. First game back, he only scored 3 points, but he's back on track now. Past two games, 16 points a game, 7 assists a game, 3 steals a game. He's getting it done all over the court. Outside the bubble today, the Davidson game, not just a big game for the A-10, it could be a season changer for the Bonnies, I think.
I agree with you. And it's an A-10 that beyond Davidson, there's teams that could still have time to make the run, even if there's not a ton of big wins, big records, I think, could do things. Like VCU, Dayton, St. Louis, still kind of on some people's boards, but I don't know that anybody else is really inside the bubble on most boards either.
Though, the one thing about the Bonnies, with them being shut down so long, are they going to be able to get some of those games rescheduled or made up? Because really, they just need data points. They just need wins. They need to get out there and play.
You know, they struggled the game at LaSalle the first game back, but then they thrashed VCU. So
yeah,
I was very impressed with that.
I was too, and this is still, while they've been disappointing, it's still the same roster, it's still the same talented team, and really it's still the same potential as what we saw at the beginning. This is a team that can make the tournament, and I think they will. I'm with you guys.
All right. Sleeka, one more conference to go through over in the Mountain West.
Oh, LaSalle, big win today. The John Stalica Award of
Okay. Sleeka, Mountain West Conference. We've been talking Colorado State and San Diego State all season, but what about Boise State? A pair of road wins this week at Nevada and New Mexico. Are they a team that you're starting to pay attention to?
No, it's never easy to win at places like New Mexico and Nevada, but then again, with Wyoming winning somewhat comfortably at Nevada right now, maybe it's not as difficult as one figured, but Boise State, for whatever reason, this team seems to be on a perpetual course for Dayton, and I'm not seeing how this year could be a little bit different short of an outright win in the Mountain West Conference.
Well, they have their big games ahead of them, two games against San Diego State, the game at Colorado State to end the season. So definitely the chances are there for the Broncos. He already mentioned, Titel, that Wyoming, as we record this, is up late by 10 points at Nevada. How about the Cowboys? You know, they were undefeated for a while until they went to Arizona, I think, and then we almost forgot about them for a little bit, I think.
Well said. Coach Jeff Linder last year, 14 wins. This year, if he can hold on tonight against Nevada, 13-2. They beat Utah State by 2 on the road last Saturday. The loss to Arizona and Tucson, certainly nothing to lose sleep over. 3-point loss to Stanford and Honolulu, looking a little better after Stanford's win over USC a week or two ago. They beat you up in the paint on offense. 58% from 2-point range is number 7 in the nation. And they beat you up from 3-point range on defense. They only allow 27% behind the arc, number 9 in the nation. Rocco gave a big shout out to sophomore big man Graham Ike earlier this month. I'm going to have to second the motion. Normally, he'd be a strong contender for conference player of the year, 20 points and 8 boards a game. But the league is so stacked with forwards, Orlando Robinson, David Roddy, Justin Bean, he might not even make first team all conference because of all the forwards in his league.
I think you're right on that. And that's unless they just go with 5 forwards, who knows, which they've done before. Or they go with like 15 players on the first team, which I've also seen some conferences do before.
I love the Mountain West, the CONAG, CONEXPO.
Upcoming tour, but here's the upcoming schedule for this week. The Wyoming-Nevada game going on as we speak. UNLV San Jose State coming up tonight. Maybe an interesting game tomorrow night, even Utah State, Fresno State, a couple teams that are on the fringe of, you know, maybe still having a chance to get themselves under consideration.
That's a big one. The loser is probably in big trouble. I'm also looking at that Boise State at Utah State game Thursday. Boise's got some chances here. If they really want to impress the committee, they're going to need to win some of these. And Utah State would be a great start.
How about the game Saturday?
Yeah, then they go to San Diego State. They have a chance for a big weekend.
But Griggs was talking about the other game Saturday. Of course, we have Colorado State and Air Force.
Air Force, front range game there.
We got one other team I want to discuss here. We do like to discuss any team that's in the top 25, even if they're not at one of these conferences. And we've got to give a shout out to the Loyola Chicago Ramblers out of the Missouri Valley Conference. Cracked the AP poll at 22 and the coaches poll at 24 earlier today.
It's about freaking time, voters.
I agree. About time is right.
Yeah, this team has been sitting there at like 26, 27, 28, like the last 3 or 4 weeks in a row. We kept thinking they would break through. They just kept winning, albeit they had some tough games, but Griggs, they've been barely pulling these wins off, but they've now won 9 in a row.
Well, that was the thing. The week they get into the top 25 was probably their least impressive week of the season, where they had to come from behind at home multiple times against lousy teams. But they did what they had to do. They got the wins. And when this team isn't sleepwalking, holy crap, are they good. The win against San Francisco was really good on a neutral floor. I guess that's their signature win. But to give you an idea of how good they are, this was a team that like had a chance to beat Michigan State. I don't remember if it went in the overtime or if it was regulation, but they led for a good portion of that game and had a chance to win it on their last possession. This is a damn good Loyola Chicago.
Well, yeah, and that's what, and Tito, yeah. This is what I look at in Loyola Chicago. Is almost you look at the two losses. Single-digit losses to Auburn and Michigan State, they've won every other game they've played.
A great resume. And the thing is, like, once they get to March, which it looks like they will, I mean, this is a team – I know they have a new coach this year because Porter Moser left, but you take a senior like Lucas Williamson, I think he's won, like, 6 NCAA tournament games in his career. Like, this guy's got plenty of experience and wins in March.
And their head coach, Valentine, is 30 years old, is the youngest coach since Todd Bozeman back in the – 90s, I think it was, to get his team into the top 25. So
right,
Bozeman and was a year was 29 with that Cal team. Yep.
I think among basketball junkies, Loyola Chicago is sort of a trendy team to like. But why aren't they getting more respect? I mean, you know, when you look at a Final Four followed up by a Sweet 16, the next time we were able to have a tournament. Followed by this year being in the top 25. This is this should be a national program when you're on a run like that.
I totally
agree with everyone, what they've been saying. What surprised me most, and I put almost zero stock into any polls, is Loyola Chicago, any team from a mid-major, low major, it takes time for them to get there. But this is a team that's been in everyone's sights the last 2 years. I don't understand why they were took so long to get in the top 25. This team's, I'm with Jed, of national prominence. This team's good.
Well, they will be moving up to become a regular on the Hoops HD report as of next year when they do switch over to the Atlantic 10 Conference, albeit in one of the kind of those other 4 conferences we throw in here along with the power conferences. But yeah, they are moving up that stage as well. But on that note, let me go ahead and throw the screen share down and run through each of you for any other final thoughts. And Stalika, why don't you give us a final thought from 1986 there?
I mean, I probably should be apologizing to Titel, given all the Princeton colors that were in Xavier Cintas Center over the weekend. But in all seriousness, I actually want to go towards a little further south to Kentucky, and that's the passing of Joby Hall over the weekend. This was the first guy who had won an NCAA title as a player and as a head coach for Kentucky during their 1978 season. This was a season they called Win or Else, if you ever go to ESPN's 30 for 30 library. And even though he was reticent to play Louisville and Denny Crum early in his career, this is a guy who would actually end up hosting a radio talk show for 10 years in Louisville alongside Denny Crum. So Godspeed to Hall and his family, and as well as the UK family.
Yeah, and real nice tribute by John Calipari on their game this weekend to Joby Hall, whose trademark defense was the 1-3-1. It's not a defense that Calipari runs, but he started the game with a 1-3-1 defense as a tribute. Real cool move by Coach Cal. Dorman.
I'm going to go with teams moving up and down the bracket. As you've seen, we've had a lot of teams. But my point is that these teams have opportunities. And even one, two, three wins can really pole vault your team, catapult your team, was what I was trying to say, into the bracket. And on the other side, if you lose two or three games you shouldn't have, one will understand, two or three, you're really moving down and in trouble quickly. So these games, the next 2 or 3 weeks in conference, are huge. Teams need to start putting their profiles together.
I agree completely. Titel.
So as we prepare to wrap up MLK Day, I just wanted to share some quick stats on African-American participation in college basketball. So according to some quick research, last year, 79% of Power Conference scholarship players and 50% of all D1 assistant coaches were Black. This year, 24% of Power Conference head coaches are Black, which is the highest percentage since 2013. 17% of Power Conference athletic directors are Black. However, Pac-12, zero Black head coaches since 2019. Big 12, only one Black coach currently, Mike Boynton at Oklahoma State. If you look back in the 90s, we had a couple who won NCAA titles, Nolan Richardson, Tubby Smith. In the 21st century, Kevin Ollie, I believe, is the only one. I don't know why it is. Part of me think it's a result of the national racial reckoning after George Floyd last year. Part of me thinks that it's the recent success of seeing guys like Juwan Howard and Shaka Smart, or the longer term success of guys like Leonard Hamilton and Kelvin Sampson or others. Hopefully we'll see more Black coaches, because the short answer is they're just as good as anyone.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. Griggs, you want to finish off the show?
Yeah, I've been trying to come up with a final thought. And I guess just looking back, I kind of feel silly bringing this up after, you know, what were two more serious final thoughts based on minorities in coaching and playing and the passing of Joby Hall. But it's just, Saturday was one of the craziest days I can ever remember, probably in the last 2 or 3 years, where just so much happened that was unexpected. And coming into the day, I mean, it's a big day. Every Saturday is putting the write-up together. Didn't really seem like it was going to be a special day at around 11 a.m. And by 11 p.m., I was like, my God, that's the most incredible day we've had in years. So at least during the regular season, minus the conference tournament. So you just never know in this sport. You really don't.
Yeah. I mean, it was probably by about 3 o'clock. We had already had four or five major upsets, and
yeah,
I think it calmed down a little bit towards the evening, because there were less evening games with NFL, being a big NFL day that as well. But I guess on that note, I do want to take a chance here to thank everybody for joining us. We will be back again on Wednesday night with Under the Radar podcast, Thursday evening with another Bracket Rundown show. But on behalf of David Griggs and 1983 Betamax John Salica up top here, John Titel and David Dorman down below, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us. Talking to you again real soon.